Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine, a very, very big show. We've gotten a lot of attention on the show. This, Jim Galloway tells us, is the biggest race ever to have an online forum slash debate in the country. We know we've had some, but we've never had it at the U.S. Senate level, only the PSC and Congressional and State House. But tonight it's going to have four panelists. We have the usuals, Catherine, Tim, and myself. And also Josh Lanier is going to be joining us. And Josh was one of the five candidates that sought this seat. And he has yet to endorse, so we thought Josh is neutral, so we'll give him the chance. But tonight's debate is between the two remaining U.S. Senate candidates. Mr. Vernon Jones is a former state rep who is also the current CAB CEO. And Mr. Jim Martin, who is also a former state rep and was the head of the Department of Human Resources. So without further ado, I believe we need to start and welcome in. We're going to have an opening statement from both candidates. And Mr. Martin, if you're ready, would you go ahead and give us your two-minute opening statement?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I'm glad to be on Kudzu Vine tonight. I've been up in Augusta this morning and have just gotten back into Atlanta. I have a long experience, a long record of proven accomplishments as a public service over 20 years of public service. I was in the member of the Georgia House of Representatives for 18 years and was able to pass over 60 pieces of important legislation and served as chairman of the Appropriations Subcommittee that dealt with the Department of Human Resources and Medicaid, served as the chairman of the MARTOC Committee, served as chairman of the Ethics Committee, and finally, for the last 4 years, served as chairman of the Judiciary Committee. 2 weeks after 9/11, I took over the Department of Human Resources at the request of Governor Roy Barnes and directed that department through its most difficult times because the state financial situation was so bleak and the budgets had to be cut to keep programs going. I was proud of what we accomplished in keeping services and meeting the demands of reduced financial resources. So I've got the background and experience to be an effective United States Senator. Saxby Chambliss has not done his role as United States Senator, and I want to replace him. He talks about being a person who follows George Bush. In fact, when he first was elected, said he was going to go to the White House to meet his new boss. I'm here to tell you that in 2002, the people of Georgia were his boss, and in 2008, the people of Georgia are his boss, and they're going to fire him this November. I'm the candidate that can take the issues to him because I have never supported George Bush, never voted for him, and believe that the policies of the Bush administration have been a tragedy for this country. It's important that all the voters turn out on August the 5th in this runoff because the turnout is going to be very low, and your vote really does matter. I'd be honored to have your vote on August the 5th.
Yes. Mr. Jones, your opening statement.
Yes. I'm Vernon Jones, as you mentioned, the Chief Executive Officer of DeKalb County. I have a record of clear accomplishments. First of all, I served 8 years in the Georgia House of Representatives. I served on the Special Judiciary, the Appropriations Committee, Health and Ecology, Insurance, and Industry. I've served the past 8 years as the Chief Executive, balancing budgets, creating jobs, investing in our infrastructure, roads, and water and sewer, at the same time doing renewable energy at our landfills where we're converting that methane gas back into green electricity. I am challenging Jim Martin at this point, not Saxby Chambliss, and let's talk about the difference between me and Jim Martin. I have a solid record of accomplishments in government. Jim Martin, when he said he was at the DHR, he was there. He worked for a Republican governor, carried out George Bush failed policies, and he was ousted a year later because of the children that died under his watch and those that were abused. I mentioned to you, I have a record of creating jobs and balancing budgets and investing in infrastructure. When he left the DHR, he went to the public defender's office. Over there, he squashed taxpayers' dollars on defending Brian Nichols, big difference between me and Jim Martin. I support the death penalty. He opposed the death penalty, and a lot of taxpayers' dollars were wasted on trying to defend Brian Nichols. And so I think we need someone who, unlike Jim Martin, he was rejected 2 years by the voters of this state. Got less votes this time when he ran statewide before, and he ran in an open seat. Running against Saxon Chambliss, going to need someone who has the experience of balancing the budget, creating jobs, investing in infrastructure, renewable energy, and a bipartisan approach to getting things done for Georgians. I have a solid record, I mentioned earlier, of accomplishments. I can do the job. I've done what he nor Saxon have been able to do, and that is operate and run a government. Our bond rating has gone to dual AAA credit rating under my administration. We've kept taxes low. At the same time, we improved services. And my environmental record is on recycling, again, renewable energy, and preserving land. Under my watch at the CAB, we preserved almost 3,000 acres of land. At this day and time, land preservation, conservation is important. We've implemented conservation policies to require homes that were built prior to 1993 at the time of sale to be retrofit with low-flow water fixtures. And so, again, I have a solid record in government, a record of accomplishments, not a record of failure. And I look forward to being the next U.S. Senator from Georgia, and I look forward to having support from Georgians.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. The next round is going to be an issue-based questions where each of the panelists will ask a question, the same question of both candidates. And in this round, Mr. Jones, you will get the questions first. Also, at times, I'll allow for rebuttal, and part of me wants to give a little rebuttal now based on the opening statements, but for time's sake, I'll refrain this time. But, Mr. Lanier, will you go ahead and ask your issue-based question of both candidates? Mr. Jones answers first.
Sure. Let me first say hi to my friends Vernon and Jim. Hope you guys are doing well and not campaigning too hard today, huh?
Hey, Josh, how are you? Thank you for participating.
Hey, I'm doing great. Good news and bad news. The good news is I'm going to ask you only one question about campaign finance reform in this entire debate. The bad news is it's this one. Every time we have a major election in the United States, particularly with a new president coming in the first few months of that administration and the first few months of a new member's service in either the House or the Senate is the time when special interests appear the most. What I want to ask you tonight is, if you are elected in November, are you prepared to make a pledge that for the first few months, let's say between January 1st, right before you take office, and perhaps July 4th of that year, would you be willing to suspend or otherwise mothball your normal campaign committee and not participate in fundraising or accept funds from special interest in Washington? I guess the first answer to that goes to Vernon.
Well, let me say this, in all fairness, you don't know what your debt level is going to be at the time you take office. If you have debt that you've created, you're going to have to pay that debt off. And so I'm not here to say that I'm going to suspend all fundraising activities. I may be in a position where I have to continue to raise. I will say this, Josh, I am very open to campaign reform, all the way down to the level where the media companies do not charge candidates at the rate that they're charging them. It's so expensive to get your commercials on TV or radio. And I think that's something that needs to be looked into. One 60-second spot on a radio could be $1,300. That's one 60-second spot. One TV spot on TV can be as high as $2,500, depending on that program. So if we want to really take the fundraising out of it, let's look at what's costing campaigns to have to pay for so much. I understand postage, but when you look at TV and radio and what it costs, there should be a cost that's minimum where fundraising is taken out of the game.
Mr. Martin, your answer.
Well, it's a fair question. I knew Josh was going to ask it. I can't make a commitment tonight, but I'm taking it under consideration. I think it's probably a good idea. I don't want to be caught in a situation where, after having run a grueling campaign against Saxby Chambliss, that I'm unable to pay my bills, but I think there's a lot to be said for what Josh is talking about, and certainly to take the money out of politics is what Josh ran such a commendable campaign on, and I think we all recognize that the system is broken in Washington as it relates to the amount of money and the special interest. So in answer to the question, I take that under consideration. I'm not prepared to make that commitment tonight, but I think there's some merit to what Josh is saying.
Yes, Catherine, your question for both candidates.
Hello, everyone. I'm here from Atlanta. Thank you for joining us tonight. On both of your websites, you highlight the imperative of providing universal health care to all Americans. Well, I'm over 50 now, and I've been hearing this for decades. But we still face skyrocketing premiums, increasing medical bureaucracy, and millions of uninsured Americans. How do you propose to solve this problem? And I would like some specifics, please. Mr. Jones, you answer first.
Okay. First and foremost, my record in the General Assembly shows that I worked hard to help pass the Peach Care Act, where we insure and uninsured children. And I believe that that has been a tremendous help to provide affordable and accessible health care. I totally oppose what Senator Shammas did when we had the opportunity to expand the children's health care insurance plan by over 4 million children, many right there in Rome and Floyd County and across the state. I would have voted for that expansion, not against it. We're going to have to look at the insurance companies. Insurance companies are the ones who are making the profits here. You know, there are those who are uninsured and there are those who are underinsured. And what I mean by underinsured, you think you have health care coverage until there's a particular medical procedure you have to have. Then the insurance company says, well, we don't pay for that. I don't know what plan is going to be the best plan right now, but I am committed. I served on the health committee when I was in the Georgia General Assembly. I chaired a number of the subcommittees. I am committed to making health care affordable and accessible. I think that's important, and I think as we begin to prioritize it, we have to start with children. Many of our children right now have absolutely no insurance, and that's where I would start, providing health care insurance for children first.
Mr. Martin?
I was the chairman of the Appropriations Subcommittee that dealt with Medicaid and had been involved with Medicaid the entire time I was in the legislature, and the Georgia Peach Care program is based on the state Medicaid program in the sense that it's very similar to that program in is a look-alike, and so allowed parents for children who are above Medicaid eligibility to be able to have access to health insurance. It's a great program. What I learned in that process of developing Peach Care is I believe that whatever we do in Washington, we've got to do something within the next couple of years. I would hope in 1 year, certainly during the first term of the new president, I hope it's President Barack Obama, that it have four elements, that it be universal, that it be accessible, that it be affordable, and that it be quality. And so that we have all four of those, you know, any plan that addresses those four issues, I'd be in favor of. There are different proposals that have been made, one by Senator Barack Obama, others by Senator Clinton and others, that have merit. But I think any plan has to have those four elements. I would vote for a plan that had those four elements, which is the difference between me and Saxby Chambliss. Saxby held his said he could not vote for the state child health insurance program because there were some technical problems he didn't believe in. Well, if you believe in covering all children, you hold your nose and you vote for it. You don't take benefits away from Georgia children like he tried to do by voting against the expansion of Peach Care and the continuation of the state children's health insurance program. I'd do differently.
Thank you both.
Tim Shiflett, go ahead.
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen, and welcome from the mountains of northwest Georgia. My question concerns Iraq. Saxby Chambliss has stated that the Democrats want to, quote, wave the white flag of surrender in Iraq, unquote. Why is he wrong when he says this, Mr. Jones?
Well, first of all, Senator Shamus is a Me Too senator. Whatever George Bush puts on the table, Me Too, Mr. President, Me Too, Mr. President. Obviously, the war has been mismanaged. He, like John McCain, want our men and women to be over there for the next 100 years. I don't. I believe in firmly, first of all, defending our country, no matter where we are, defending our country and eradicating terrorism. As it relates to Iraq, though, clearly we need to shift the responsibility of this war to the Iraqi government and the Iraqi people, and certainly have presence there to provide training to the military and to their police so they can defend themselves. At the same time, we look at what's happening over in Afghanistan. The surge is increasing over there. You look at our military men and women. They have been in several rotations. Our military personnel is replenishing, and we have to now act on finding a way to encourage and incentivize and provide more benefits and better benefits to recruit more of our office, of our military men and women, because right now our recruitment levels are down. So I'm diametrically opposed to what Senator Saxby Chambliss has done so far. He has not concentrated on the men and women. He's just been, again, that Me Too senator. And for a man himself, as you know, didn't serve himself. He found a way to get around it. He should be the last one sending our men and women over to Iraq.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Martin.
Well, it reminds me of what Senator Jim Webb told me that he says to the members on the Armed Services Committee who didn't serve in Iraq. He says, to you people who haven't had the honor of being able to serve your country in military service, I want to tell you something. Well, I served in Vietnam, and I can tell you that it's irresponsible for Sashby Chambliss to make a statement like that. This is about how we most efficiently deploy our troops to face the international threat of terrorism that this country faces. The policy in Iraq has been failed. We need to make the policy decision in Washington that we're going to leave Iraq and allow the Iraqi government to stand on its own 2 feet. Our soldiers have fought honorably and successfully in Iraq. That's not the question. The question is, what's the best utilization of our resources? It's time for us to bring our troops home, to rest them, to retrain them, to re-equip them, and make them ready to deal with other threats to our national security, such as Afghanistan. You know, the 48th Brigade is getting ready to deploy to Afghanistan next year. It's a direct impact on Georgia families. We need to make sure that we take on the Taliban and al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and the fairly administered tribal areas of Pakistan, and his statement about Iraq is irresponsible.
Thank you.
Yes, to both of you, I want to let y'all know I'm a classroom school teacher, and I firmly believe the best way to improve educational performance is to improve student discipline. Do you agree or disagree with this concept? And if you agree, in what ways would you work to improve school and classroom discipline? And if not, what do you believe would do a better job of bringing about educational performance? Mr. Jones, to you first.
Well, first of all, I disagree with the Leave No Child Act, Leave No Child Behind Act. That left the states behind, the money behind, and the child behind. It didn't work because they went in the back room and came up with a policy that was one size fit all and left out important input from people like yourself who was in the classroom, superintendent, school board members, and community. I am very receptive to holding students accountable, having those disciplinary actions in place, at the same time holding parents accountable. They need to be a part of the equation. I am open to dialogue and entertaining that. However, I want to make sure that the local school systems are more in control as opposed to the federal government. I think that's the problem. You can't have a one-size-fits-all, and if we come across with blanket legislation for the entire country, it would take away the flexibility from those your schools and those local jurisdictions. I welcome to be engaged with a conversation with you, sir, as a school teacher in terms of what you think is best. What do you think we should put in place, but also with those parents as well to have their input and come up with something I think we all can agree with and something that would work and is measurable. At the same time, keeping in mind when you're talking about disciplining a child, we don't want an environment where a kid who can make a mistake is expelled from school and never get a chance to get back in the school system. I think we have to be mindful of that. But at the same time, we can have something that can work, that can hold a child accountable, hold the parents accountable, hold the teachers accountable, but keep in mind keeping that child in school so that child can receive a quality education.
Yes, Mr. Martin.
Well, the focus is on children who are disruptive and how you go about dealing with their needs and also preventing them from disrupting the entire class. And it's a very difficult question, very difficult problem. When I was in the state legislature, I worked with State Representative Georgiana Sinkfield to put into the Quality Basic Education Act funds for in-school suspension, which is a way to remove the child, disruptive child, from the classroom, but to continue them progressing along in their education so they don't drop out of school. There are all kinds of other kind of interventions that we can make to try to help children who are struggling, but certainly the child who's disruptive in the classroom needs to be removed and put into some special program or special given special instruction or special assistance to deal with the educational problems that they face. We face a terrible problem in this state of children dropping out of school who just give up, and we give up on them, and I'm not prepared to do that. I do believe that we can't allow a child to be disruptive in the classroom, and they need to be brought put into alternative placements or in school suspension or other kind of programs that would allow them to advance without hurting other children.
Yes, well, thank you. I want to tell y'all that when I posted the detailed schedule on Tondi's Tavern, people commented that we're Democrats. We could never keep this schedule, and actually we have a little problem. We're ahead of schedule. But Tim Shiflett and Catherine Smith, they came over prepared because that's just the kind of folks they are. So if I thought it was okay, they have more issue-based questions. I was going to go back to Catherine, and then if time allows, back to Tim to ask a second question. Catherine?
Thank you very much. Over 1 million people have now signed on to former Vice President and Environmental Leader Al Gore's challenge to produce 100% of U.S. electricity from renewable sources such as wind and solar within 10 years. How will you work in the Senate to fulfill this challenge, Mr. Jones?
Well, I'm the only candidate that has a record on the environment and a record on conservation. For example, I started a recycling program in the cabinet.
Let me just interrupt you. We're not talking about conservation. We're talking about renewable energy, wind and solar, and trying to achieve 100% electricity in 10 years.
Ma'am, I think it's all related.
Okay.
I have a record on recycling. I have a record on green space preservation, protecting our natural environment. I have a record right now in our landfill where we're capturing that methane gas. We partner with Georgia Power, and we're turning that back into green electricity. We're turning trash into cash. We've also established an agreement with Jacobi Energy where we're doing the same thing at one of our other landfills that closed, but this we're partnering with Atlanta Gas as well, where we're turning that back into natural gas. I have a record on renewable energy. The presidential candidates are talking about renewable energy, but we're actually doing it in DeKalb County. And I would take my experience and my track record and the relationships that I've developed into Washington and come up with a piece of legislation that can provide the incentives for the private sector to invest in alternative energy sources like wind, solar, and biofuel. So it's nothing new to me. We're actually doing it right now. I have a record of it. We've invested $4 million about 2 years ago. We've already made $2 million on it. In about two more years, we'll have it paid off. Again, that right there is renewable energy. To the heart of your question, we're doing it right now.
Thank you very much. Mr. Martin?
Well, I think the answer to the question is that we need to have to defeat Saxby-Chambliss so that there can't be filibuster, so the filibusters by the Republicans in the Senate can't continue to stall any sort of energy efficiency legislation. I don't know whether that goal is achievable, quite frankly, but I'm committed to making sure that more and more of our electricity is generated from alternative sources. I don't know if you can do 100%. I just simply don't know the science behind that. But I do know that for the last year, the Democrats in the United States Senate have been trying to pass alternative fuel legislation, and they've been blocked because they didn't have 60 votes. That's why it's so important to defeat Saxby-Chambliss and allow me to go to the United States Senate. I can beat Saxby. I will vote in favor of alternative energy. The Republicans have been lockstep in protecting big oil and their tax benefits because that's the only way you can, or one of the ways you can fund alternative resources in the Congress. So it's important that a Democrat be elected from Georgia to support President Barack Obama. I think we do. I have read, frankly, that 80% is a goal that could be achieved. 100% may be one that I just frankly don't know if the science is there.
Okay, thank you. Tim?
Yes. Gentlemen, for either one of you that might get elected, obviously the next senator is going to have to deal with a water issue since the states of Georgia, Alabama, and Florida, frankly, have dropped the ball on this. We know that the metro area is growing at a very rapid pace, and this water situation worsens daily. What should the federal government do about this, Mr. Jones?
Well, first of all, I have a record at the local level, at the end user, where we supply water to our customers, where we've had to invest in our infrastructure so we can not only be able to pump more gallons per hour, but to be able to have the water supply. And we've expanded that from 4 days to 7 days, and the amount we're pumping now is about 150 million gallons per hour. At the same time, we're taking some water from various basins. This requires someone having experience, knowing how it has an impact on the local customer, to provide the leadership, to bring the administration, the new administration, and the senators from those affected states and the respective governors and legislatures to the table and say, look, this water supply issue, we can either hang together or hang separately. We have to come together and share this water, and let's work out what the issues are. You know, I'm all for natural wildlife, but fish don't have to get up and go to work. People do have to go to work. And so we have to work out and have an agreement and have the relationship, bipartisan relationship, interstate relationship, and have a plan where we can not only share the water, but address the issues in terms of creating new reservoirs. When I was in the Georgia House of Representatives, back then Speaker Murphy was talking about creating more reservoirs. We have to also look, though, at using, I should say, recycling non-drinking water. We have a master plan on the way now. How are we going to deal with non-drinking water, how we can recycle that? I think it's going to be a comprehensive approach, not only working with the various states on the water that we're currently sharing, but how we capture that water, how we store that water, and how we reuse or reuse non-drinking water.
Okay, thank you, sir, Mr. Martin. Well, with all respect, DeKalb County. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think isn't it my turn to answer the question?
Yeah, I thought you said thank you, Mr. Martin. I was trying to clear, but I'm burning.
No, I said in all due respect to Mr. Jones, the issue is not how DeKalb County uses water. The issue is a statewide, region-wide problem of having an adequate water resources plan that we have refused to develop in Georgia. The absence of that puts us in a real disadvantage in negotiating and discussing our water needs and our water efforts with the other states. When I was in the legislature and I was running for lieutenant governor, encouraged people that we needed to develop a comprehensive water plan for Georgia. Once we have that plan in place, then we can determine what's the best way to conserve water, allocate water, make sure that the entire ecosystem is protected, because we're all in this together. The wildlife, the fish, and human beings all rely on the same ecosystem, and we need to make sure we protect it. What I would do as a United States Senator is make sure first that to the extent federal funds are available to help with the development of that plan, that those are made available quickly so that we can see what our situation is. Once we have a comprehensive plan in place, then I think we can negotiate with our neighbors and defend our position in court to make sure that that there's enough water so that for agricultural purposes and to maintain our wildlife and fisheries, and also to provide for rational growth in throughout the state. They're difficult issues, but the absence of a plan, we don't know exactly what we ought to do.
Yeah.
Can I respond to that? Is that okay?
Rather quickly.
Okay. It shows Mr. Martin's lack of experience in providing water to his customers. You can't just wait on the state or the federal government. Local governments have to improve their infrastructure and expand their infrastructure so they can provide and continue to provide water. And at the same time, they do have to look for those plans or roadmaps on how to reuse non-drinking water, because even when the battle continues to go on, when you can't address the issue on the regional level, both local governments are still responsible for delivering water. And so, Mr. Martin, I know you never had the opportunity of doing that, so you probably don't understand that, but you can't just wait on the federal government. You have to have everybody has to be moving forward, the local governments, the state governments, and the federal government.
I think I'm entitled to a response to that.
Sure, quickly.
When I was Commissioner of Human Resources, I passed septic tank regulations. That's one of the critical watershed problems we have in the state. Tried to get those through effectively so that there was some control over the septic tank use across our region, which is really one of the contributing factors to our water shortage. So to say that I don't have any experiences, Vernon knows that's not correct, and like a lot of the other things he said tonight, he knows they're just not true.
I'm sorry.
Both of y'all, obviously, I think everybody could agree, have a varied background experience, and that is one reason why we're having two different segments to this debate. This first segment here was on issues where we ask you the same question. The next question is issue-based, but it's also on your separate backgrounds and different issues y'all might be promoting. So this round's going to be, each candidate will get a question from each panelist, but they will be different questions. And we'll go ahead with Josh Lanier having the first question to go towards Mr. Martin.
Thank you, David. Jim, as you know, I mean, one of the unique things and one of the unique powers and responsibilities of the Senate is to advise and consent the president. We're all looking at potentially some changes on the Supreme Court, and I'm just curious, as an attorney, you know, as well as a former legislator, what kind of qualities are you looking for? I mean, are there areas that concern you more than others if we start to see vacancies and we see...
Well, that's a very good question, and it goes through all the judicial branch, not just the Supreme Court, but you asked a question about the Supreme Court. I want fair-minded judges who will follow existing precedent, who will be able to understand, who have a commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law, and who are not political appointees, or not in the sense of political hacks, people who can think outside the box, people who understand that the Constitution is the basis of our democracy and needs to be defended, and that that decisions that the court makes needs to be based on the history of our country and on the history of the Constitution as it's evolved.
And so I'm concerned about judges who now are the activist judges, frankly, who are, have a very conservative point of view on the court, who are, aren't looking to prior precedent. And I would I think that it's important that the judges look to existing precedent.
Great, thank you. Vernon, on because you've been an executive, and you speak frequently about, you know, budgets and balancing budgets, one of the things we confront on the federal level every time we get into a budget cycle is we're looking at, you know, 60-some-odd-plus percent of it is pretty much locked down at the beginning from entitlement spending and that sort of thing. The rest of the government, you know, is the only one where there's flexibility to adjust the budget. How willing are you to take a look at entitlement spending adjustments in those programs as a way to deal with reforming that budget or even balancing that budget? And the second half of that question is, have you considered and would you be supportive of, if necessary, a constitutional amendment that the United States budget be balanced?
Well, first of all, being the only one with the experience of submitting and passing a budget and balancing a budget, that's very easy for me to answer. Every expenditure is up for to be looked at, to be reviewed, and whether or not we should continue to fund or not to fund or increase that funding or decrease that funding. When you start to talk about a balanced budget, you have to make sure that your expenditures don't exceed what you take in. You have to look at your revenue projections and try not to overextend yourself. Obviously, the federal government under the Bush administration and Sacks-Chambliss, they have no fiscal responsibility in their mind. I have the experience of balancing budget, Josh. I think every item should be looked at and reviewed. There should be nothing in stone. At the same time, I am used to balancing a budget. I did it when I was in the Georgia General Assembly. We had to balance a budget. I've had to do it as the chief executive of DeKalb County. And I think on a federal level, we should have a constitutional amendment balancing a budget. But the only exception would be when it comes to wartime. At that particular time, you may have to exceed your budget, but there's a need for that. But, you know, on the surface, having a balanced budget act, I'm all for it. I support it. I think it's a good thing.
Got it. Thanks.
Yes, Catherine, your two questions for the candidates.
Okay. Sorry, I'm not quite as ready as I thought I was.
Well, if you're not, you want to pass?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine now.
Oh, good.
Mr. Martin, by all accounts, you're a very nice guy. Unfortunately, in politics, as in high school, many times nice guys finish last. Senator Chambliss is responsible for what is considered by many to be the ugliest campaign in history. What preparation have you made for what will likely be another very ugly campaign should you get the nomination?
Well, I thank you for that question, Catherine. There's a difference between me being mean and being tough. I'm plenty tough. I've been through some pretty tough campaigns. This runoff election has turned into be pretty tough when my opponent misstates my record and says I have a failed policy on this and that. And, you know, I expect that in politics, and what I have to defend me against that is a record. People could look to what I've done and what I've said, and I've always been able to accomplish I've been able to accomplish a lot, and I always have been a man of my word. I'm going to stand up to Sacks-Chambliss. That campaign was cowardly, and I've said it. We are going to work to make sure that the clearest differences between me and Saxby are debated. That's what gives me the advantage over my opponent, Vernon Jones. Vernon Jones has voted twice for President Bush. How in the world can he debate with Sacks-Chambliss over the failed policies of the Bush administration when Saxby is going to throw right back at him the fact that he voted for George Bush? This election in November, the fall election after this runoff election, is going to be the opportunity for Georgians to stand up and to say that the policies of the Bush administration have been a failure and that we need to move forward on the lines of a change government that Senator Barack Obama is talking about.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jones?
Yes, first of all, the voters of Georgia rejected Jim Martin 2 years ago when he ran for lieutenant governor. It was an open seat. He didn't run against an incumbent.
Catherine's going to have a separate question for you that is going to be tied to what a rebuttal would be.
For him to make those comments, I just thought I had an opportunity to rebuttal. I
apologize for the pause.
Mr. Jones, campaign disclosure reports indicate that you have contributed to the Georgia Republican Party. Why should a Georgia Democrat vote for a candidate who has financially supported the very well-funded Georgia GOP?
Well, first of all, when I got elected chief executive officer, President Bush was elected the President of the United States. As a mayor of my county, having to work with both sides of the aisle, work with the federal government, we purchased tickets to the inauguration. That's what that was for. That's who the check was made payable for, and that was the purpose of it. And since that happened, as a mayor, you know, when, unlike maybe my opponent, Jim Martin, I'm responsible for running a government, responsible people. When we dispatch fire and police to people's homes, we don't ask their party affiliation. When we fill their potholes and we pave their streets, we don't ask their party affiliation. I had to work with a Republican administration, a Republican Congress, and I was glad to say I worked with Jack Kingston out of Savannah, but also worked with a Democrat, Sanford Bishop, South Georgia. But with that, we were able to bring millions of dollars to DeKalb County, DeKalb County's taxpayers, so we can improve the infrastructure, build the roads, improve our major corridors with intersection improvements and sidewalks and various development projects. And so when my opponent talks about George Bush, my opponent worked for a Republican administration and carried out a Republican agenda, failed Republican agenda. I'm sorry, that's the problem now. We're getting so bogged down in partisan politics. And we should be working across the aisle, working with each other. And my opponent cannot beat Saxby Chambliss. Everyone knows he's weak. He lost in an open seat where he had no nasty race. He had no incumbent to run up against. I'm the one that can beat Saxby Chambliss. Jim Martin, quite frankly, is too liberal from Georgia, and I think he's out of touch with mainstream Georgians, and that's why he has the worst chance of beating Senator Chambliss.
I think I am entitled to respond to that.
1 minute or less.
Well, okay. See, now that's not. But when I was trying to,
well, I am entitled to respond to that.
I think I'm
entitled to respond to that, Mr. Jones.
Well, when you call my name earlier,
I think I'm entitled to respond to that.
Okay, I just want to understand the rules. Then, when he called my name,
Let me just ask a question.
I just want to ask a question.
I just asked about the rules, and I guess I'm the referee.
All right.
Can I ask
in the
question?
Opening statements, I felt, Mr. Jones, that you attacked Mr. Martin in a way which he probably deserved a response at that time, but I decided not to allow a rebuttal after an opening response. So I think at this time, if Mr. Martin can have 1 minute or less, that probably puts things about fair.
That's fine, and I won't belabor the point. I have worked with Republicans my entire life to get things done. I was the Commissioner of Human Resources under Governor Barnes. I submitted my resignation to Governor Perdue. He decided not to take it, so I continued that important job at DHR during a very difficult time under Governor Perdue. I have never contributed to Republican Party. There's a difference. I can work with Republicans, but I don't believe that the Republican Party is the best party for this state, and I don't vote for Republicans, and I don't contribute to Republicans, and that's the difference between me and Vernon Jones.
Mr. Jones, if you'd like to have a short response to that, I'll allow it.
Thank you so much. I voted twice for Bill Clinton. I voted twice for George Bush. I voted for Barack Obama. Jim Martin, on the other hand, he voted against Senator Barack Obama and voted for a man who did not want to run for president. That's a big difference between me and him. That means in the fall, he's not going to vote for Senator Barack Obama. He's going to vote for somebody else as a write-in candidate. That shows he's not committed to the party. He's not committed to Senator Barack Obama, although he keeps talking about he supports Senator Barack Obama, but voted against him in February and voted for a man that was not even running for president. That's just say something about him. And he did not leave under the Republican administration until he was ousted. All the secretaries or commissioners had to submit their resignation. It was a formal process. And Jim was allowed to stay on like everybody else, but after he failed and those kids died on his watch, he left, he was ousted. Check the record. Jim Martin was fired from DHR.
Well, I know you probably want a response to this, but we're going to have to go ahead and move to Tim Shiflett, and I will tell you one of the points brought up is going to be readdressed. Tim, go ahead.
Okay. Gentlemen, what I would like to do is address some criticisms that you have heard about yourself in the last year, beginning with you, Mr. Martin. You entered this race very late, and you were asked to enter by some National Democrats. Now, some have described you as a, quote, reluctant recruit. Others have been more blunt and said that you're nothing more than a political opportunist because all of the other candidates were in the race for over a year. How do you answer these critics?
Well, by my record. I mean, that's not my record. Anybody who knows me knows that I have taken on the most difficult challenges. When Ralph Reed was getting ready to run for lieutenant governor in Georgia, there wasn't a Democrat who really wanted to step up and take him on. I ran in the primary to do that. It turned out that he didn't even get through his regular primary. And I almost beat Casey Cagle, and if the predatory lending bubble had burst when I was running, I would have won because I was absolutely right about the danger that the Georgia laws that didn't protect homeowners from predatory lenders posed for this state. I have gotten in this race late. There's no doubt about that. But I have run as effective and as hard as I could possibly run to make sure I got my message out, and the voters are showing or responding to my message in a very overwhelming way. And I believe that they know that this is a critical year. They want somebody with experience who can run an effective campaign against Saxby Chambliss, and that's why they're voting for me.
But, sir, just to clarify, I need an answer to the following question. Were you talked into running by national party leaders?
No, that's not true. I did meet with folks to discuss the possibility of me getting in this race, but I was not talked into running this race. You know, I'm the only one who's run a statewide campaign at this point between Vern and me, and I know how hard it is, and I wouldn't have gotten into this thing if I didn't think I could win this thing and if I didn't think it was worth it to make sure that Saxby Chambliss is not returned to Washington and we have a working majority of 60 votes or more in the United States Senate.
Okay, thank you, sir. Now, Mr. Jones, we're going to expand on what we've been talking about in the last few minutes with regards to you. You and I both know that all too often in the past year, there have been many who have said that you have in the past been a little bit too supportive of some Republicans running for office, and therefore some people are not certain of your Democratic credentials. How can you put those concerns to rest?
Well, first of all, I'm an independent voter, and I'm not being hijacked by the left wing of the Democratic Party. That's why we're where we are now. We've lost both U.S. Senate seats. We lost the governor's office, the lieutenant governor's office, the Secretary of State's office, the last Democratic Public Service Commissioner's office, the House of Representatives, and the State Senate, because liberal Democrats like Jim Martin's been running. I'm in touch with mainstream Georgians. I voted twice for Bill Clinton. I voted twice for George Bush, and I voted for Obama. I didn't vote against him for somebody who wasn't even running for president. I am not a partisan guy. You can ask people from my days back to the Georgia General Assembly. I've always worked on both sides of the aisle because it's what's best for Georgia is not what's best for the party. That's the problem I have with Senator Saxby Chambliss. Even when he knows President Bush is doing something wrong, he still goes along with him for the party. Well, I've been able to vote for President Bush and criticize him on his issues, whereas my opponent, Jim Martin, will support John Kerry, and John Kerry was the one who voted for George Bush to go to war. He voted for George Bush to give the tax cuts for the rich. That's the difference between us. I want to do what's best for Georgians. If it's not in touch with mainstream Georgians, I don't support it, and I don't care who the president is. And when Senator Barack Obama becomes the president, if he does something that's not in the best interest of Georgians, I'm going to oppose it. I am an independent thinker. I am not one of those that's been hijacked and led to believe that I have to carry on with the Democratic Party, even when they're out of touch. I can't do it.
Okay, now a quick follow-up question to that, and then we'll move on. If President Bush was running this year, would he have your support?
No, he would not, because President Bush obviously has gotten out of touch with mainstream Georgians. He's shown no fiscal responsibility. He's put us in a war that we should never have been there from the start. It's been mismanaged, and I disagree with that. But when President Bush ran for the first time in 2000, I supported President Bush because he talked about a bipartisan approach to government and to the problems we were facing in this country, and I supported that. And Al Gore, by the way, he said, the heck with the South. We don't need Georgians' votes. We can win without the South. So he didn't come to Georgia and ask for my vote and other Georgians' votes. That's just like me not wanting to vote up in North Georgia. I said, I don't need you all to win. What are you going to do? You're going to vote for me or you're going to vote for somebody else? I think you're going to vote for somebody else. And John Kerry borrowed the same losing playbook. He said, the heck with the South. We don't need the South. We can win without the South. And never came down to ask for our votes. If either one of them had won one southern state, they would have been the president of the United States today.
Okay, thank
don't
you,
take
sir.
My
Next.
Vote for granted. I'm sorry, I just want to say, don't take my vote for granted.
Okay, now it's the moderator / panelist's turn to ask my questions. Mr. Martin, your question first. Mr. Jones has claimed that you voted against Barack Obama. First, is this true? And if so, do you believe that you can that if someone supported Hillary Clinton or John Edwards, can they still be a good Democrat? And then I guess a follow up to that. Also, who is this write-in candidate you're supposedly supporting?
I am supporting Senator Barack Obama. Everybody knows that. John Edwards is supporting Barack Obama. He'll be a great president. I'm supporting Barack Obama because I disagree with the policies of the Bush administration. And I can make that point in running against Zachary Chambliss, and I can help Barack Obama carry Georgia. Somebody who has been a supporter of the Bush administration cannot make that argument. I voted for John Edwards. That's true. I gave a little bit of money to John Edwards. That's true. I'm delighted that Barack Obama is our candidate. This is the opportunity for Georgians, Democrats, to reclaim our heart as a Democratic Party and to be true Democrats and to run effectively in Georgia, elect the next president of the United States, and throw out Zachary Chambliss. I just hope we don't miss that opportunity.
Okay, so are you pledging that you are not going to write in any candidate's name?
Sure, I'm voting for Barack Obama.
I just wanted to dispel that, right? I mean, or just
sure, I understand. Thank
look
you.
Look at that. I should say, since Mr. Jones brought it up, I felt we need
thank you so much.
Look at it.
Right.
Well, in all, Mr. Moderator, in all fairness,
if you want to mention what write-in candidate that you believe Mr. Yeah. Martin's going to vote for, please tell us more.
Here's what I'm trying to understand. When the February 2008 primary took place, presidential primary took place, John Edwards said he is, way before then, he is no longer a candidate. He is not running for president. How is it that this so-called good Democrat will vote for a man who said he does not want to be president as opposed to voting for a man who said he wants to be president? I'm trying to figure that out. I can't figure that out. An 18-year legislator, he worked in two government branches. He ran statewide for lieutenant governor. How would a man like that come to the polls when there's only one issue on the ballot, and that's to select the Democratic nominee for Georgia, and he voted for a man that was not running for president? I don't understand that.
I have a possible theory, but I think it's appropriate for Mr. Martin to announce that.
Well,
Mr.
I mean,
Martin, did you early vote?
No, I voted in the election, and John Edwards' name was on the ballot, and the race had not been decided. I had given a little bit of money to John Edwards early on. And the truth be told, this issue of how people vote only became an issue when Vernon Jones, for his political advantage, announced that he had voted for George Bush, I guess trying to make sure that he was the conservative candidate in the Democratic Party. I'm fine with the vote I cast. John Edwards' name was on the ballot.
But he wasn't running for president.
His name was on the ballot. He had suspended his campaign. I am committed to a lot of the issues that John Edwards is committed to, dealing with the poverty issues in this country. His response to Katrina was an important statement of public policy. I think Barack Obama's campaign is consistent with John Edwards' campaign. But the big point is I'm a Democrat through and through. John Edwards was a Democrat through and through. Barack Obama is a Democrat through and through. George Bush is a Republican through and through.
But he wasn't running for president. Answer the question, why would you vote for a man that was not running for president?
I think I've already answered that question.
Yes. Need to move on to so we can have closing statements and whatnot. Mr. Jones, in the past, and in the eyes of the law, I might add, you were wrongly accused of sexual assault. And in your defense, you released a statement that said that it was a consensual sexual encounter among three adults. My question to you is, do you believe Georgia is ready for a U.S. senator that has openly engaged in these types of encounters, and how like Zachary Chambliss might use this against you?
Well, let me tell you, President Clinton was a good president. President Clinton had some issues in his personal life. Ted Kennedy, one of the greatest senators we all talk about, had some issues in his personal life. By the way, both of them were married. But they had distinguished records of public service. If we're going to start to judge people based on their personal life, then let's open up the book on Jim Martin and Zachary Chambliss and everybody else's. I believe the people are more concerned about the record price they're paying for gasoline, about losing their homes through home foreclosure, about our men and women serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, and all the other issues with health care that people are dealing with every day and day out. I have a record of balancing budgets. I have a record of creating jobs. I have a record of investing in the infrastructure. I have a record in renewable energy. And my record outshines Jim Martin's record any day. If someone wants to make a decision based on my personal life, fine. But I'd say this. I believe at the end of the day, and based on me getting almost 200,000 votes, more than anybody else, including Jim Martin, who was recruited by the National Party, people had an opportunity then to say whether or not they want to support me based on my personal life or my record. I believe they judged me on my record. I believe I was a top vote getter last time I checked. I think you can check that as well. And so I'm going to let people judge me on my record. If I have something to hide, I wouldn't run. And I ran because I believe I have something to offer. I have already offered things in Georgia and DeKalb County, and I look forward to it. I'm not going to sit on the sideline because some others who have no record and want to call themselves squeaky clean, who really don't want to talk about their personal life, but because they haven't been reported in the news, they think they're a better candidate. Let the people decide. I think voters are smart enough to look through it, don't you?
I think voters look at a lot of different things, issues and biography.
And who was the top vote getter? Who was the top vote getter?
Well, if that's simple math that you did get more votes, certainly. I mean, we can all do math and agree on that. Well, I think we've finished this issue, this round, and we're ready for closing statements. But once again, we're a little ahead of schedule. I know this debate got a little contentious at times, and there's some charges that y'all both feel y'all might not have had adequate time to respond to. So I know we had planned for one-minute responses, but if people want to go ahead and take two-minute time for responses, we can go ahead and have a little rebuttal time to any charge you don't feel you were able to answer. Mr. Jones, you first.
Well, listen, I want to concentrate on being the next senator from Georgia. I want to say to everyone who's listening right now, this wasn't contentious. This was about talking about my record and talking about Jim's record. I have a record. Go ahead and check. I have a record of balancing budgets. I have a record of doing renewable energy. I have a record of creating jobs and investing in the infrastructure. And I want to go to Washington and do the same thing for this state and this country that I've been able to do for DeKalb County. I was elected twice by over 700,000 people. My friend Jim Martin, nice man, he had a chance to run. He ran in 2004. He was rejected by the voters of this state. He ran again this year. He was rejected again and got less votes than I received. I am not here to do but one thing, and that is I want to represent Georgia and Washington. We can do better than what we have with Saxby Chambliss. He's a Me Too senator. He's not an independent thinker. He's voted for a record deficit. He's voted to take our men and women to war without questioning them at all. And at the same time, he doesn't care about ensuring young children in this state. Give me an opportunity. I may not be the media's choice, but I get the job done. Nobody's ever attacked me on my record. It's always personal. And I accept that. The fact of it is, I want to be your senator. Just please give me an opportunity to do you proud.
Mr. Martin, you'll have your closing statement, and you can have some rebuttal time.
As part of the closing statement?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I just appreciate you having us on this this program. I think the program speaks for itself. The way in which questions were handled, the responses, are a good indication of how somebody will act in the United States Senate. I have a proven record of getting things done that I'm proud of, and I'm running against Vernon Jones on my record. 18 years of distinguished service in the Georgia legislature, serving as the chair of important committees, the Appropriations Subcommittee that dealt with Medicaid and DHR, the Ethics Committee, the Morrow Overview Committee, and 4 years in the most important position in the legislature in terms of a committee, the House Judiciary Committee, where I worked across party lines to make sure things got done. 2 weeks after 9/11, I became Commissioner of Georgia Department of Human Resources. I'm proud of my service to the state in protecting children. Every time a child was injured, we all felt sorry about that, and we really were the ones who felt the most bad about the whole thing. And we tried to fix it. We had to reduce the budget dramatically because the state revenues had declined so dramatically during the period of time after 9/11. Governor Perdue kept me on for a year after I submitted my resignation. I stayed on not to help Governor Perdue, but to help children in Georgia. I ran for lieutenant governor because nobody would stand up to run against Ralph Reed. I was proud of the campaign we ran, and frankly, the campaign we ran is an indication of the Democratic Party of the future in Georgia, a broad-based party that talks about the issue, that's effectively run, and can take on the challenges of the Republican Party. And what are those challenges? The policies of George Bush that Vernon Jones voted for when he voted for George Bush. an energy policy that didn't exist that resulted in $4 a gallon gasoline, the absence of any effort to deal with the health care crisis in this country, and a war in Iraq that has sapped our energy, sapped our soldiers, sapped the economic vitality of this country, and needs to end. It needs to end honorably with a decision by the President and the Congress to withdraw and allow the people of Iraq to stand on their own two feet and to bring our troops home. That's what I'm in favor of. That's not the George Bush policy that Vernon Jones voted for. That's certainly not the policies that Saxby Chambliss is talking about right now. I'd be honored to have your vote on August the 5th.
Yes, I want to thank both of y'all for joining us for this forum. And if people want to find out more about your campaigns, Mr. Jones, your website is VernonJonesForGeorgia.com, correct?
That's correct.
And Mr. Martin, your website is MartinForSenate.com.
That's correct.
That's correct. So people can learn more, and there's going to be at least two more debates during this runoff season, so please, you'll have plenty of time to answer more questions and tell more about your policies, and people can hear more. But I want to, again, thank y'all for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good gentlemen.
Yes, Mr. Lanier, I wanted to come back to you. We had you as a guest panelist. You have not endorsed the candidate yet. After having the chance to ask your three specific questions of the candidates, are you ready to endorse either candidate?
And here's your setup, John. No, David. I mean, I've told both Vernon and Jim this, and as well as talked about this. I mean, this has nothing to do with Jim, Vernon, or the suspense of this race, my position. Mine was clear before there was a primary. I think the last time I mentioned it was on the press club debate. I mean, if I'd had another chance to ask them a question, I was going to tell them both I'm still standing by on the 6th to be of any help I can throughout the state, particularly down in South Georgia. But I think one of the things that's important that we talked about it in, at least I did in the race, of how important it is that we respect the voice of the people, and that we start looking toward more back to putting power back with the individual voter, rather than to, the endorsements and the party structure of candidates and so forth. So I mean that's just something personal with me. It has absolutely nothing to do with my friends Vernon and Jim. But when the people speak on the 5th, I'll be standing by on the 6th.
Yes. I just thought we'd have to make the ask. But once again, thanks for coming on with us, Josh. And
it was great fun. And I really want to congratulate you because I did read some of the other articles I saw on the internet. The last few days about this is sort of a history making thing for you here, and I think it's just great. I mean, all of us participated on Kudzu Vine early on, and you've always been great about making that time available throughout the last year to 16 months. So. It was sort of fun tonight, even though I'm in Washington, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm in Washington tonight participating in this. But it was fun to go dust off and put on my journalist hat for a few minutes and take off the politician hat.
Well, once again, thanks for coming on. We just have about two more minutes, and I want to tell you, I don't have next week's show booked, even though both Tim and I are working on it, but we have some great things that we hope will come together that maybe not top this, but at least come close. Also, I know that folks were interested in the DNC elections. I'm sure a lot of you read the results on certainly Blog for Democracy and Tondi's Tavern. But David Worley and Richard Ray won for the males, and Paige Gleason and Sally Rosser won for the females, and Representative Pedro Maran won for the vice presidential constituency chair and our vice president of constituency groups. So those were the winners as a follow-up to last week's show. We had all those candidates, and people told Catherine, I think both in Macon yesterday, how appreciative they were for the chance, and people listened, were appreciative of what they could hear of the candidates, and that helped make up their mind. But I guess as we kind of go out of this forum, there's a group called Take Back Georgia that is playing a radio ad called Shameless Saxby. It doesn't talk about pro or con on either one of today's candidates, our candidates, the Democrats, but about Chambliss. And I thought we'd kind of close by playing that and then see y'all next week.
Stuck in traffic? Tired of spending over $4 a gallon on gas? Senator Saxby Chambliss shamelessly takes money from big oil while we feel the pain at the pump. In fact, he's taken tens of thousands of dollars from big oil already just for his re-election. And we wonder why America is still dependent on foreign oil.
Saxby Chambliss voted against rising mileage standards for our cars, voted against reducing America's oil use, voted against developing newer, cleaner cars, voted against incentives for alternative fuels, and voted against removing subsidies for big oil companies despite their record profits. All while we feel the pain at the pump. In fact, it's almost like Saxby Chambliss doesn't want us to be energy independent at all.
It's time to take Georgia back and send Saxby Chambliss home for good. Join our effort today by going to www.saxbyshambliss.com and learn more about Saxby Chambliss' record. Georgia deserves better.
Take Back Georgia Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising. Paid for by Take Back Georgia Inc. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.